Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Oh, hey, guys.
And Justin Robert Young.
Yo, what up?
Man,
Brian, did you see Justin drinking? I did.
I was pointing at him, half to warn him that surely he's going to be called out, and also to encourage you to get him. Get him.
Oh, your friendship is inspiring. So I have been doing a little research on email subject lines.
Oh, yes. No, very interested.
I will I'll send you like an early form of the document I'm working on. And what I was trying to find out was like actual real what works, what does not work.
And hey, if it'd be fun while you're setting this up, I'm going to open up and I could tell you how things have performed and what our best.
Oh, that'd be great. I think you do a really good job of it. So I was trying, I did a search for like how to write an email subject line, came back with 9 million hits. I didn't read all of them, but I read a good portion of them. And I was trying to find like actual research. And one of the things will happen is you'll get a company like, let's say, MailChimp will go in and they'll pull 200 million emails and tell you like, well, we saw this had a higher open rate than this other thing. And like, well, that's problematic because I don't know the relationship or the context between the sender and the recipient. And you can get advice that might sound great, but also something that happens too, if they say use these words, like I found on MailChimp had two articles. One was like, hey, use emojis. They're a great thing to put in your subject lines. It attracts attention. And I found a separate article is like, don't use emojis because it looks like spam.
Well, like, but you're right. If you identify your relationship with with your audience, you can get away with a lot of stuff. Because I think for what I do, you know, I have built a personality brand where I talk to the audience. Sometimes I'm asking them for help to get me booked on a gig. Sometimes I'm telling them I'm in the area. Please come out and see the show. Sometimes I am providing, here's an essay. Hey, here's that original letter that Teller and I exchanged or whatever. Sometimes it's like I want to sell you something flat out. But I remember one time, there's a brief hot minute last year where we were just A-B testing every single thing. And for whatever reasons, like everything was neck and neck, like virtually, 14.1% versus 14.2%. We honestly didn't even give it a long enough time for it to be statistically significant to tell which one was going to be barely more open than the other. But we wrote the A line for the other, for one, and it was just like, you know, shoot fireballs like you're Iron Man. And then for the other one, I just couldn't think of anything to do for the B test. So I just wrote, I found the real killer, and then hit enter. And then.
What?
And then hit send. And then, sure enough, 2 hours later, at 14.2% opening, I found the real killer was the winner. Like, and it just didn't matter. So at some level, you know, if your friendship is healthy with your clientele, they're going to open it no matter what it is. And I found myself in the awkward position recently of – having to explain to a few people, we reached a tier on MailChimp during the holiday season that we just could not add any more subcategories. And so finally, like there had been a list that I had been building since 1999, every single show. I'm going to give away a book, sign up for the book, go back to the hotel room, spend an hour, hour and a half typing in names or whatever. I typed in over 35,000 names and then at some point started paying other people to type in the names on there. But every single one, like this was a precious list of 35,000 people who I had seen face-to-face, eye-to-eye, and they had touched pencil to paper to say, I want to continue to experience your stuff. And I recently had to fold them in to just the big – just the big pile now because everything's changed. Like I only had one stage show related, you know, fan only email. And so, and now I'm the bad news is that I guess those people for the first time ever will, you know, hear about custom high quality decks that we're working on. But the good news is all the other people, I now have a very important reason to give, to make sure that nobody ever knows whether or not I'm selling them something on the email.
Well, you, yeah, if you provide enough content, it, which is great, and I think that's a really good building. So I, in doing my research, and what I was getting to is I went and pulled up, tried to find the actual studies, like besides just where they tell the open rates, I found one thing that was cited a lot, which was an actual Carnegie Mellon study on email, right? Because it's like kind of like, how do you really find out like what works? And you've done a lot of experimentation. You've tried a lot of things to try to figure out how you approach this. And I was curious, like, well, have psychologists or other people address this? And I found this study that was referenced multiple times. Multiple times you do these searches for like, oh, research, whatever. You'll say, well, Carnegie Mellon study said this. And a number of times they don't even link to the study. They'll link to somebody who mentioned it. And I found in some cases where it was mentioned two or three times through links, but nobody ever went back to the original study. So I went out and actually found the study.
Oh, wow. The actual paper.
The actual paper, which as far as I can tell, is the most cited research study on it's called Should I Open Email? Inbox Level Cues, Curiosity, and Attention to Email. And it's from like 2011, which is recent, but still that's 5 years and a lot of things change. And one of Andrew's laws about things, any sort of technique or marketing, by the time you're aware of it, we've already evolved to be immune to it.
Yep. Yep.
So I read through the study and like, there's even been a best-selling book that used the study and mentioned it, even like a very, very well, highly regarded person, I think, who does have good advice, who talks about this study. But I will tell you what, I'll let you draw your own conclusions about this because I was curious to find out what, because they'll say things like, here's a couple points that were gleaned from the study. The study is two parts. The first part was what they called a think aloud study, which is where they went to a group of people and they said, hey, we're going to follow you as you go through your inbox. Explain to us why you're opening this and what you're doing, right? Which seems helpful, okay?
Yeah.
Five people.
Wait, so that's not a substantial size.
Five people. And they were going through their work email inbox, going through why they're responding to work email.
How did that get published? How does that
that's
even?
That's the first part. So that's the first part. That was
Brian,
like the thing.
What if it were the Jackson 5?
Yes. So that was the first part of the study. What they used that for was then to design the experiment. The experiment they went to, they had 38 people. And what they did is they wanted to study how 38 people evaluated work email. And the work email they were evaluating wasn't their own. It actually came from a sample, which was, I kid you not, from the Radar Roar Gaming group, which was – it was work email dealing with conference planning. And again, it was, did you open it from this boss or not from this boss? And so all the things that, you know, we've heard gleaned from there, like, oh, like, well, you know, things about referencing maybe money or this or whatever have nothing to do with anybody we're trying to reach. And – There was useful stuff in there. Certainly, if you were trying to figure out like why do people pay attention to some work email and some not, and that's what they were trying to use. And I don't want to disparage the authors of the study. They wanted to figure out like in a work environment, how do people, you know, evaluate this or whatever, you know, and we can say what's a significant sample size or not. You can use two people and you can get great information if you qualify and you know what you're looking for. Okay. But when you're talking about people looking at fake email in a work environment about conference planning, and you're trying to figure out how to write a marketing email, not a lot of context, but they did say, hey, here are the two big takeaways, which was they found out that, that emails that had utility or emails that engaged curiosity were most likely to be open. So it's like, okay, let me get this straight. If it's interesting or useful, somebody will open it.
Crazy. Okay.
But I'll tell you what. Takeaway number three will leave you baffled.
Here's a fun.
You won't believe what they found out next.
Here's a fun game. You and I have obviously done a lot of poking around on this. We have intuitive feelings on it. But Justin, I don't think has read this. Like you. Yeah, we could all play, but I suspect Justin's the one least likely to have read this article on MailChimp. Subject line comparison. They pulled out stuff from the best open rates and the worst open rates. keep in mind, best open rates defined as 60 to 87% opens versus 1 to 14% opens. So I'm just going to say them, and you tell me, Justin, you guess whether it was in the best. And keep in mind, best means more than half, 60 to 87% versus 1 to 14%.
Okay.
Company name, sales and marketing newsletter.
Lower.
That is one of the top openers.
Wow.
Because if you love Justin,
company name.
If you love Diamond Club and it says Diamond Club sale in every Monday, you know that there's hot business going on in there, then you got open that every Monday. That's your Wall Street Journal. Go ahead. You want to play a few more?
I went through this whole list and I'm going to tell you the problem with that study.
Okay, go for it.
One is we don't know the context or relationship. And so that's the problem is we don't know. I love Brian Brushwood. I will read Brian Brushwood's emails. I have other people who are magic marketers who write very sleazy kind of stuff and could use sort of the same to you. But if I feel cheated by them, that thing you talk about email marketing newsletter, what they found out, though, was there's a fade. Eventually that drops. So you're good for the first few emails, but they found over time that becomes – you don't want to use this, which is problematic. We don't understand the context. And I'm going to give you an example of an internal study I did. I have one email list, which has about on average a 23% open rate. I have a separate list that has a 49% open rate. And I have a third email list that has a 75% open rate.
Oh, wow.
Now, same idiots writing the subject lines for all of those. But I have one what has got triple the other, double and triple my, and a 23% open rate. It's great. That's my lowest open rate I have is a 23% one. On one list, that's the average. Okay.
Can I make a guess as to the distinction? Because I have similar sublists. The one that people absolutely open are people who have bought a thing from you, and the emails that go out about it are about the thing they paid you money for.
They're actually different. They're very different sort of views for different things.
Oh, never mind then.
So I'll break it down. The 23% is my Andrew Main everything. And that's people who, and the problem with that list is, that's people who maybe like to be on TV but don't like to read books. That's maybe people who like my magic tricks but don't like my books, or people who like my books and don't care about anything else. I put everybody into one list, you know, because I'm like, I just trying to parse it out and write to three different things and there's overlap. I'm just going to put it all there. So that's the my Andrew Main mega list at andrewmain.com. By the way, everybody who was on that list got a link to a free copy of Orbital. Not trying to plug anything here, but so that was number one. Number two,
tomorrow.
49%, 50%. You know what that is?
Huh?
That's the weird list. When I send out things to the weird things group, the weird list, it's a 50% open rate. Okay. And that's a few hundred. Then I have about 500 or so. The 75% open rate, darker path.
Oh, interesting. What is the content? Is that you alerting to new episodes?
Yeah, it's like, here is when we're doing like a new darker path, you know, talking about when we're doing it. I don't do much on there, but that's like that to be a darker path fan, you had to be a fan of, you know, one of the three of us, a fan of weird things and a fan of something, you know, crazy that we're doing. So it is, as you say, it is a subset, as you pointed out.
Well, but, and, you know, there's a similar place where there's a list that I use maybe once a year. But it's a very, very powerful list, and it must be an on-target message for me to press the button on it. And maybe once a year, I write an email that is related to cord killers, and it consists – it's a list of 5,000 people who, when frame rate was shut down on Twit, and we said, we don't know what's next, but if you want to come along for the ride, sign up. Pretty much the only things we're allowed to do is announce things that are happening, you know, specifically for cord killers or whatever. I called Tom and I said, hey, this is a two switches operation. Are you okay with me promoting my TV show on this list? He said, yes, but it's like a 60% open rate every time.
That's the power of having an audience that's like super into something you do. So, I've been doing some more stuff. I'll share with you at some point, Bri. I'll send you on the thing I wrote about it and my thoughts and get your input to it, because I think that, you know, I've seen there are people I think who do a good job of it not, but trying to figure out what you do. And the biggest takeaway I have was like from the studies and stuff, without context, you can do, you know, the best research you're gonna have is like what you're doing is you do understand your relationship, do some A/B testing, and then try to figure out from there. But the worst thing you can do is to not have a list at all.
Oh my God. Are you? Yes, yes, yes. A million times. Yes.
I had to recently take to task a friend of all of ours who is writing a book he probably should have written 6 years ago. But I told him like, hey, listen, like he's like just at the beginning of writing it, but he had published a few little anecdotes. It's Amtrekker. And so he's writing an Amtrekker book. He put out a thing today. Everybody should go read it. And it's the first part of it. And hopefully, I have not actually read the Medium post, but hopefully at the beginning or the end, he puts his mailing list there, because I was like, listen, you should publish. Like the story that you have is amazing. It's like it might be, if I were going to list people that I know, like, you know, that are among my best friends that have done amazing things, this is one of them. It's so compelling. Whenever you're at a party, it's all anybody wants to talk to you about. This is great. Run some of these, you know, proto essays basically that will eventually make up the book, but build your mailing list. Like you can't put this out here and not capture that heat, you know, like it's just crazy. It's dumb not to.
Yeah. You don't want to wait until you want to sell a thing or push a thing to say, now, how do I do this? You know, and that's problematic, because people are like, oh, well, now I need to tell everybody about this thing. Like, you have nobody to tell. And it's like, yeah, I wish I'd started it a couple years ago. And I wish I'd started my email list 5 years before when I did. But at least, you know, you're better off if you start it. So even if you're like thinking like, maybe I want to do something creative, just start it now. Just start it. And you don't have to do anything with it. It's just, it is... 5 years ago, it was the most powerful way you can reach your audience. 5 years before, 20 years ago, it was the most effective thing. And it is going to be, whether it's an email or whatever direct way I can contact you that does not go through a social network is extremely valuable. So one of the things that one of my pieces of advice that I came up with was looking at realizing that one of the hacks that you can do in the short attention span environment is treat your subject line like it's a text message.
Yeah.
And that way, if you know, like, they'll never open my email, but they know Andrew Main's new book, Orbital, is out, and they get a couple, you know, and I have other ways to talk about that that's not repetitive and driving people nuts. Somebody will always be upset. Somebody is always going to want to unsubscribe to you. That's understandable. It happens. And you can't let unsubscribes, you know, a few of them make you decide, well, I shouldn't talk to my list. No, you know, if you're not having some people say, people have to balance their marketing. But now, treat your subject lines like text messages. And so even if that's one of the things they don't measure in any of these studies is the fact that a really effective subject line tells people, hey, I have a new book out. You don't even need to open this email to know that it's there. And if I hit you a couple other times with information or content about that, you know my message.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things you can do to shake things up. There's an expert named Ryan Deiss, R-Y-A-N-D-E-I-S-S. This is going to be my pick in advance. I've met him a few times. He's a really great guy. One of the biggest, most successful at this game on the entire planet. I got to spend a couple days with him. He's super, super good. One of the things that he recommended is you keep trying different things. And one of the experiments that he suggested is if you feel like you're stuck in a rut, if you feel like you want to, it was at one of his talks that, I got that metaphor of, you know, your brand is what's inside the vault. Your sales are when you cash that out and exchange it for money. You can't have sales if there's nothing in your vault. You have to build up credit in the bank account. And the way you do that is by providing value and so on. But one of the ways to shake things up and get more out of your relationship, because again, whatever it is you're doing, you are engaged in a strange one-way, largely one-way asymmetrical friendship. But you are a real person in the mind of these people and you want to continue to last in their minds. So he suggests try doing a 6-word email. Like whatever it is you normally do, stop it, knock it all off. And so
our emails had kind of moved, I don't want to say fallen into a rut, but you know, you could only make so many hilarious stories about pirate ninjas kidnapping you and using spy equipment to escape. Before we ended up settling around 24% or whatever on there. And so I wrote simple text. And in order to do proper MailChimp stuff, you have to have an unsubscribe link or whatever. So I made it look as much like my normal plain text everything. I no links, no nothing. And it just and the email subject was just the single word favor question mark. And this was in late August, early September. And I wrote I said, hey, we're all gearing up for the big holiday season. What's your favorite stuff in the store? You know, it would just help me out to know. And then I sat there, and for the next week, I personally answered every single email that came in. We ended up with a 40% open rate from just the word favor. I still am answering those emails, and it's extremely tedious. It's insane. It also, I would say 98% of them were thoughtful, very informative emails. 1% just shouting, "Hey, shut up," or whatever, like you would expect. And then,
Justin.
And then 1% saying, "Are you a bot?" And then I you know, write. And then all of a sudden, I'd write back like, "Well, if I am, I'm the best you've ever seen. Come at me, sucker. You know, let's touring test this." But what emerged out of that was a stronger relationship, more direct. Everyone felt listened to, and it was a lot of work. I ended up answering, here, I'm going to type in the subject heading here on Gmail. And keep in mind, this is 40% on, I think we were at 80,000 subscribers at that time.
You were replying to so many emails at that point that Gmail said, you cannot send any more emails.
For the first time in my life, I was just replying. And then Gmail said, yeah, you're cut off. Yeah, that's all the emails you are allowed to send today.
So how many did you...
Okay, so when I type in, quote, favor, question mark, and I'm sure I'll get a few wrong ones in there. Well, it only lists as many, unfortunately. Is there a way to know more than
click
many?
Click through a couple pages there, and it'll start to give you more accurate.
Okay, 400 and many, 500 and many, 600 and many. And as I'm going through... It is clear that 98% of these are all exchanges between me and another person. I'm now up past 3,000 personal exchanges. And even if it's just a couple of words back, you know, even if it's just, yeah, international shipping sucks, which, by the way, I did not know until I did this experiment, yeah, ended up around 3,500 personal interactions. So you're looking at out of 80,000 people, give or take, 40% opened it. So that's, 16,000. And out of that, they read it and then they personally wrote me an email. And then I was able to respond to every single one of those, which tells me, there reaches a point. I mean, it's great to have a big list, but you could tell the other 80% to F off if you got the right 20 that's
oh yeah.
Engaged.
Definitely. And you know, it's a great tip too. And something you and I both do is we both respond when people write stuff. And we've learned, like, I will do one sentence replies. People are like, hey, it's great, blah, 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 or whatever. I will do one sentence replies. I try to reply to everything. We both do that on Twitter. You know, people are like, oh, are you real? You follow so many people. And we're like, yeah, no, have a conversation, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, maybe I can't respond to a whole email in depth, but hop into a live stream and we'll have a conversation. So you and I both respond to this. And I'll tell you this, something that's funny is I get an email from one of my favorite authors, or who's one of the, we'll arguably say, one of the best-selling authors of all time. And let me read to you the first sentence in the email.
Right.
Please do not reply to this message.
Oh, that's great.
If you have questions or wish to unsubscribe this email, see the instructions at the bottom of this message.
That's great. All of a sudden, I'm super engaged, and I'm just like, oh, I'll show you. I'm gonna read the whole thing.
No.
Yeah. Oh, really?
No, Andrew. Yeah, Andrew takes the other side of that.
I disagree.
I think that when I see an email, that my first thing is, don't reply to this. It's a marketing thing. It's an FU.
I think it's an automated sales receipt. And I'm like, okay, cool. Then I won't bother because it doesn't need me.
This so is, when this I get an email, imagine if the first thing people read when they you sent them an email, they got an email from Brian.
If it said this is an automatically generated whatever.
I just said, please don't respond to this message. If you want to reply to me, go all the way. That's the first thing. Oh. That's the first message you get.
Oh, wait, he gives convoluted? Well, because I do think it's very courteous and very cool to say, hey, you don't even need to read this if you're busy right now, but this was a weird thing that happened today. And if this
it's please do not reply. Like, as in, if you have something to say, you can't use this email to reply to me. You got to go do some other hoop to go tell me whatever.
And goes the
other mile to say, and I know what you're going to say, idiot. How do I unsubscribe? It's right there at the bottom. Let me save you an email that I have to write.
Oh, God, that's the dumbest crap ever.
The point is like, I think that it feels like a more an angry, sort of not a friendly thing. But listen, I think it's time to go because I've heard that it's somebody's birthday and maybe their family wants to share this with them.
You got it.
Safe.
I texted all you guys saying, hey, I got to go. My kids need to sing me happy birthday.
Brian said,
back.
I'm going to do this pure away off stage. And everyone said, look at Brian. He has to hammer dance off stage right now.
Yeah. As far as email insights, I tried something else that was fun, which is I just went to Reddit looking for dad jokes. And my way of giving a little wink and saying, also today's Black Friday, we have a sale. And it was an adorable dad joke that I thought was hilarious. So subject line was dumb joke. I laughed at anyway. And then two line note. Guy goes to a zoo, but the zoo is so lame. It only has one animal, a lonely dog. It was a Shih Tzu. And it says, you know, Brian, and it says, P.S. Today's Black Friday. Everything's on sale. Whatever. Got like 40% opens on there. It was amazing.
Leading
all right,
you.
Totally.
All right. Look up Ryan Dice. I got to go. Bye.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to Bri. I'll tell you, there's a lot of really, really, really good insights. I know that, like, this is the first year that I've really used a mailing list to kind of run a business. I will say that the two biggest things that I learned in two different businesses, both the Contender and the stickers, were the mailing list. I mean, like, it's kind of simple. Like, you know, there's let people know that something's there, and they will come and buy it if it is of worth and you have a relationship. Though I will say that I don't know how qualified I would feel giving advice that wouldn't be willfully ignorant of all the other work we've done to maintain the community, you know? And I think that's the biggest thing, that there's no quick fix. There's no, you know, one weird trick to make everybody fall in love with you, you know? It's either you care about people and you have something that they want to part their money with, or you don't. And, I think figuring out what is right for you is not a universal thing.
Yeah. I think that's the problem, is people want the easy answer, and the easy answer can sometimes do more damage. But there are some simple things you can do to make it a better approach.
110%. And you know, I think that there's one of the biggest things that I took out of news writing was writing for clarity of information. And you realize, like, why does all news copy sound stilted? You know, why do headlines read weird? They don't sound like something that you would say to somebody. And you know, digital headlines have kind of changed the game a little bit, but newspaper headlines, where the art was kind of born, was based on how long you had to write and how much information you could accurately pack into that size.
Over the line. I'm crying foul. You've gone too far. You are a monster. Continue saying whatever you're saying. We'll talk about this on Night Attack.
No, you don't.
All right. You want to know what? Let's just wrap it up. Thank you, guys. We'll be back for Night Attack a little bit later. Happy birthday to Brian. We'll have more email chat going forward. Andrew, what have you done?
I did not do this. I wish I did this, but it's pretty hilarious. Everybody, thank you very much for tuning in. Check out, sign up for our email list. And for our listeners here, by the way, my new book, Orbital, which I talk about on Weird Things. It's a sequel to Station Breaker. You can buy the ebook now for 99 cents. You just saw the photo, yeah.
I don't know what I'm looking at.
It's Harambe.
Oh, you do, you son of a bitch!
Oh, that's... All right, yeah. Okay, that's great, that's great.
It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.